A sinker, a line. It's Fish and Frank's, and that's with myself, Fish and Frank. I guess that makes sense. Robert in a chair across from me, and our producer and all-around go-to guy, RJ in the booth. And the three of us make up, you know, Fish and Frank's radio fishing type show thing here. We're going to get to tarpon, the king mackerels, the AJs, the black drum, the snook, the bass. We're going to get to all that. You guys awake and alive today?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
This morning, afternoon, whatever it is.
All right, did you get out fishing at all?
No.
No. RJ, did you get out?
It rained all weekend.
Behind the house, I have been.
How'd it go behind the house?
Good. A lot of snook.
A lot of snook. Don't tell me you caught more than I did, or this is going to be, like, the end of the show right here. Okay, go ahead. What did you get?
Day before yesterday, probably about, let's see, I had 6 casts in a row and 6 fish, and then I had another 5 casts in a row with 5 off.
All right, what were you using?
Storm swim bait.
Oh, this twitch stick?
No, the swim bait.
Oh, the little paddle tail shads.
Yeah.
The swim shads.
Yep.
All right, what color?
The amber mullet or golden mullet.
Yeah, the one with the brown and kind of clear white on the belly and all that. Yeah, that's awesome color.
She went 16 in a row on shrimp.
What do you mean? 16 casts, 16 snook?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So Christina's just kicking your butt?
Yeah.
So, but she was using bait and you were using artificials.
Yeah, but it was still fun.
Yeah, so just...
Some jacks, some redfish, a couple small black drum.
Really?
Yeah.
You're making my story suck. Go ahead, though. Keep going. Just beat me up.
The last couple days have been phenomenal back there.
No.
Last 4 or 5 days, actually.
Okay, but there is a reason, because the fishing wasn't that good in the canals in Port Charlotte just a few days ago, right?
Not at all.
So what's making it go now?
All this rain. All those spill dams are dumping over.
Okay, so the rain is causing the water levels in the freshwater canals to rise up and start dumping over the dams.
Yeah.
For anybody who doesn't know, in southwest Florida, Port Charlotte, Northport, Punta Gorda, you know, all the way on up through Venice, I believe the law is the law.
Pretty much most of the state.
Well, U.S. 41 is the dividing line between freshwater and saltwater. Back in the 50s and earlier, when they started building all these canals and stuff, they decided that there had to be a boundary line. This is fresh water. This is going to be salt water. Otherwise, people would have dug canals all the way back in. They just wouldn't have stopped because saltwater canals are much more valuable property. So they said U.S. 41, if you're to the west of it, it can be salt water, brackish water, or even fresh water. But to the east of U.S. 41, it has to be fresh water to keep the salt water from intruding into the freshwater areas, the freshwater wells. State law dictates everything east of 41 is fresh water. Everything west can be fresh or salt or some mixture of.
Correct.
So what happens is, as we get these rains, the stuff on the east side of 41, all those canals start to fill up with water. That water has to go somewhere. And it comes to a dam, a weir, a spillway of some sort that blocks the salt water from going up. So it's going to be higher elevation, dumps over. And why is it important when the water dumps over, Robert?
It flushes over nutrients.
Nutrients?
Yeah, nutrients.
We've been through this before. What the heck's a nutrient? I'm staying compliant. That was the least terminology I could have. What's a nutrient?
Nutrients are a lot of your dissolved organics, which are like...
Dissolved organics? Give me a frickin' break. What is a nutrient? I don't care what a dissolved organic is.
It's the same thing.
What? They're the same thing?
A little different, but that's part of it. The dissolved organics are all of
Is it just me, or is he talking in riddles again today?
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, pelts, so explain yourself, young squire.
Yeah, exactly.
A little Latin involved. No, the dissolved organics are your leaves, your grasses, all of your natural plant material that starts to die and break down. And it doesn't just disappear. It actually creates food sources for a lot of your different
algae.
Like
algaes. A fungus or an algae or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the plants creates, and leaves break down into some type of fungus or algae.
Yeah. And that feed, you know, those breaking down create nutrients to feed the new growth of all those new plants. But some of it breaks down to even finer particles where it turns into little micro and macro algaes that are suspended in the water column that your little fish feed on. I mean, like, your largest fish in the world, which is what?
Cooks. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
A whale.
A whale, all right.
Eats the smallest stuff in the world. You know, eats plankton.
I didn't think whales were fish.
Mammal, sorry. You're all right. I apologize.
The biggest
even the biggest
aqua
fish in the,
creature.
Well, let's go with the biggest fish in the world. Which
whale shark.
A whale shark.
Right.
Filter feeder, feeds on plankton. So,
gotcha. Now, plankton can also be like, okay, so you've got it, algae and little microscopic pieces of vegetable matter,
mm-hmm.
but it could also be insect larvae, insects themselves, frog eggs, fish eggs. There's just a whole bunch of stuff that would compose this kind of plankton-like material that's coming over the dams.
Yeah.
As that water first washes up, it's going to carry over bugs, insect larvae, bug eggs, fish eggs, frog eggs. It's going to be carrying, everything comes flooding over that dam.
Yeah,
because
a lot
of high water volume.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff was on dry land just a few days ago, and all of a sudden it's submerged underwater. I mean, it literally just had a tsunami. It came through, picked up all that stuff off the banks that were 3 feet down that were completely dry, pulls that stuff down, and pushes it over the spill dams. And what the cool part about that is saltwater, you have your saltwater algaes, and then freshwater, you have your freshwater algaes. You get those things pushing over and mixing together at the same time creates a beginning of a food chain. You know, you've got your saltwater bait fish, you know, like your thread fins, your greenbacks or scaled sardines, even menhaden, which we have a small population of in a lot of these canals. They move up into those canals and up towards those spill dams to feed on the new kinds of nutrients.
So all that food that's dumping over, even mm-hmm. though a lot of it is almost impossible to see, it's so small.
Correct.
These fish are only 2, 3, 4 inches long or less, and they're coming in there to feed on all that stuff that's being dumped over.
Yep.
So once you have small fish coming to feed on the smaller objects, that brings bigger fish to feed on the rest of the objects. Because you've also got crayfish being flooded over.
Baby
got
bass, baby bluegill, freshwater shrimp.
Yeah, minnows. I mean, there's everything. When that water comes up and it really floods hard, they're not thinking about holding on, and all of a sudden they just get hit with this current. Next thing you know, they're being washed over to dam.
Yeah.
Now, once it goes on for a while, they're kind of dug in. Anything that's going to wash over has washed over. So this is a rather limited time event.
Yeah. Yeah, the event probably lasts anywhere from a couple days to a couple weeks, depending on how significant our rainfall is. And with as much as we've been getting lately, it's going to be very short-lived.
Well, we're going to get a whole lot more this weekend.
Yeah.
We got off with our National Weather Service briefing this morning, and they're saying this tropical disturbance is going to move up along the coast, and we're going to get 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds, but we're going to get a ton of rain. And the rivers are not at flood yet, but they will be at the end of the weekend.
Oh, they're really close, yeah.
Yeah, it was at 7 foot 2 days ago.
Yeah, so it'll go over based on this storm as it goes north.
So basically you've got this weekend from when you're listening now, go along U.S. 41. Now, wherever there's an access road, like say in Port Charlotte, all right, go down to Port Charlotte where Bob Evans is, and you drive up that side of the road and on the access road and coming
Bob
back
Evans
north.
On the south end of town.
It's on the south end of town. That's what I said. You got to drive down.
There's two Bob Evans, though, in Port Charlotte.
There's two?
Yeah, there's one over by the Port Charlotte Mall.
Oh, well, forget that one. That one doesn't exist. I don't know that one. The one down by Fish and Frank's.
Okay.
You go all the way down the south.
People the right direction so they don't get lost.
Gotcha. So you go down to the one by Fish and Frank's. It's the only one I know about. And you come back north on that access road, just a little bit up north of there, you look out the passenger side window, and you're going to see a dam there. Mm-hmm. And find a place to park, go up there, take the storm, not the very smallest one, although that one will work. The next size, I think it's a 3-inch or a 4-inch, white. and cast it right into where the water's falling.
Yes.
And you don't want to cast below the water falling. You want your bait to literally fall with the water. So you cast right to the top of the dam just so it hits that falling water. And then as soon as it hits the bottom, which is like a half a second, just start reeling it and jerking it back out. A lot of twitching and starting and stopping, or you can even go with just a very slow retrieve. But you're going to catch snook, you're going to catch tarpon. There's all kinds of stuff that are going to be there.
Even a largemouth bass on occasion.
Even bass will be there. And the reason we use those paddle tails, now you can make your own like with a DOA cal shad, but I'm going to suggest white to brown and white, something with white on it, though. Shad colors are good. You can use red shad, red with a white belly, blue with a white belly, black. It doesn't really matter, but it's got to have some white in it.
Yeah.
White's the one universal color. It goes good in dark water or light water. So try to make sure it's got some kind of white in it, like brown back, white belly. Cast it right into the falling water. Now, you can do that all the way... literally down Burnt Store Road all the way through up to Venice. Wherever you see the water falling off a dam, you can go up. If you can find place to park and walk up to it and just start casting. Now remember, this is May, and watch the gators.
Yes, definitely going to be there.
I'd say it's a little early for them to have any babies, but it's on the cusp. And
no, they've already hatched out by now.
They've hatched out?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're going to be displaced, too, because of all this water coming around and moving around a lot.
And the one thing about gators, the only time I worry about gators is when they have the little babies. Because gators are actually pretty smart in one way. If the kids stick around too long, they eat them.
Yeah.
So, you know, once they come out of the egg, they protect them. All right, get out of here or you're dinner.
Yeah,
I mean, they will literally eat their young after 2 months or something like that.
Yeah, not very long.
It's not very long, and they've got to go their own way or their lunch. You know, no living in the basement here. You're out of here.
Now, let's say you're a horrible lure fisherman, or you want to take your kids fishing with you. And you
yeah, now I'm a horrible lure fisherman. You get this, RJ?
I said,
first he's outfishes me.
Are.
I'm not even telling my story yet because he's, you know, wrecking me. And now I'm a horrible lure fisherman. Go ahead. Keep going. Sink yourself here, buckaroo.
Hey, you've taught me a lot of stuff about lures.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, let's say you're a horrible lure fisherman and you don't want to mess with lures, or you want to take your kids out because it's a holiday weekend and want to just enjoy some time in between the rainstorms but not go out in the boat. If you were to go to these spill dams, what do you think would be the best ideal bait and setup to fish around those spill dams?
Freshwater shiner about 18 inches below a bobber.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Because if you go 2 or 3 feet, that shiner's going to get caught in the rocks a lot.
Yeah.
And but now, to me, I would do the exact same thing I was doing with the lure. I would take the live shiner with a small bobber about 18 inches up, and I would throw it right into the falling water.
Yep.
And now, the one thing you hope and pray for is that when you throw it into the water, it gets sucked behind the dam. So if you don't see it come up, don't reel it in. Wait till you feel the pull of a fish. Because when we were kids, I used to go out and we used to play. We had dams behind the house. There was a little creek / river went behind the house. And whenever you got through the waterfall to the back side of it, it sits perfectly still, the water does. Literally no current, no movement back behind the waterfall. The water's perfectly still. So if you can make it under the waterfall and get behind it, you can stand there, sit there, whatever you want, and there's no current, there's no nothing. And that's where the fish like to be. So if you can get that bait to hit with the bobber and the shiner, get it to go and be sucked behind the dam where it'll pop up behind the dam, that's your most likely place to catch a fish. Because those fish, lazy, they don't want to fight that current and sit out there. Some will, but a lot of them will try and get right behind the dam, especially snook is unbelievably lazy. They love laying behind the waterfall. And so if your bait can go there, don't pull it until you feel the force of the fish. If you don't see the bobber pop back up when it comes down the waterfall like you do most cast, you get that one lucky shot where it went underneath the dam. Just hold on and wait for the feel of the fish because you're in the perfect spot to catch fish. Usually the bait will come down and the bobber will pop back up. You can see it going away from the dam.
Yeah. No, that's true. You know, and you're going to have, with these shiners, the main reason why you want to use those shiners is because it's part of the natural food sources being washed over.
And right, that's what they're there looking for.
And it's going to match just about anything, you know, even though it may not look like a bluegill or whatever, or a saltwater fish. They look so similar, and those fish are there for that buffet. I mean, they're literally there to feed on everything.
And it doesn't matter if it's a 2-inch little bait fish or a 4 or 6-inch bait fish. They're going to hit it no matter what.
Yeah, it's got a very short lifespan when it gets washed over that waterfall.
And what's weird about a waterfall is when the water comes down and it hits, it goes through the water behind the waterfall is dead still. The water in front of the waterfall is literally going back at the waterfall. It's not going away from it.
Right.
And so your first few feet, the water's actually traveling at the falls. So a lot of times your bobber will come up and you'll see it, and a lot of times it'll head right back to the falls. But then the water will grab your line if your line's in the water, and it's the weight of the water hitting your line that actually pulls your bobber back away from the falls.
Oh, absolutely.
If it wasn't for that, a lot of times it will just keep going back to the falls, go under, pop back up, go back to the falls, go under, and pop back up. That's why it's very dangerous if you have a large falls like Shell Creek Dam. If you get too close to that dam, that water is rushing at the dam.
Yeah.
It doesn't push you away from it. It pulls you into it.
Yeah, absolutely. But every one of these places, both where it's saltwater, freshwater meeting together, or even freshwater canals, because like popular canal system that's here in Northport and in Port Charlotte is the
Nine Mile Hillsborough, Cocoplum.
Yeah, Cocoplum Waterway or Nine Mile Canal. You know, there's a lot of little levees and spill dams on that. Plus, you've got culvert pipes that are running underneath Hillsborough that flow really hard, too. And they're equally as good, if not sometimes better, than those spill dams are.
Yeah, if you can find a good flowing culvert pipe, you're going to catch some fish.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And if you go, let's say you take Toledo Blade from US 41, taking Toledo Blade towards I-75. As you go up, the first flat bridge you come to is the Cocoplum Waterway, 9 Mile Canal. The name of that road is Hillsborough. Now, I like coming back north on that road, and there's a big dam there. It's got great waterfall coming over it, and there was a lot of place to park and walk up. You got to be careful right now. And then if you head back towards Port Charlotte on that, you're not going to see like, oh, this beautiful open area and it's a park. What you're going to see is a little area where somebody tromped through the grass, a little kind of pathway, think prehistoric pathway, just kind of a trampled spot in the grass getting back up. So watch for things sticking up along the canal, like the mechanism of a weir or a dam, something like that. When you see those, you've got to figure out how to get back there. Now, no flip-flops. This is a time for preferably boots, but if nothing else, at least tied-on shoes and pants. I don't go back there in shorts. I don't never go back there in flip-flops because red ants, snakes, scorpions, all kinds of stuff live in these high grasses, and spiders and everything else. I highly recommend pants with boots on, or at least tennis shoes, something tied to your feet, and walk back, find where you're going, and catch some nice fish back there, because it's pretty awesome right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, you can use artificials like the Storm swim bait paddle tails,
mm-hmm.
or you can use crankbaits, spinnerbaits, beetle spins, plastic worms. There's such a variety of stuff to use.
I would even try some topwaters, like some of the frogs, the soft plastic frogs that are out, that DOAPT.
Yeah, might early be really in the morning.
Well, with as overcast as it is, it still might work pretty
well. You got topwater fishing
well.
All day, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's overcast the way it has been, fish don't have eyelids. They don't want to look in the direct sun. They can't squint. So if it's overcast, if you can look up comfortably, so can a fish. And that's the sign of, okay, go ahead and use topwaters.
Yeah. You know, it's worth experimenting with, without a doubt. And, you know, like we said, there's a couple days to maybe a week of this left where it's going to be super exciting. You know, and going back to the saltwater part of it with behind the house, just to add to the story of stuff,
okay.
All that water lettuce is being washed over those spill dams, too. The manatees, I guess, were out there yesterday having a good old time grazing on it.
the water hyacinth and all that kind of stuff.
I didn't see it, but you know, she was watching it, and they were sitting out back just munching away on the stuff.
Hi, Christina.
You know, it was pretty interesting with all the different things that were going on out there, and you're going to see that going on throughout the entire harbor, the Peace River. All these areas are really pretty cool right now.
No, I agree with you. Now, while I didn't get a chance to fish in Robert's backyard, I guess not all of us are that lucky. I took my dad out in a boat, the original Fishing Frank. He called me up and he says, do you want to go tomorrow morning? What time do you want to go? Which was better than the day before, but he said, I'm going to use your boat. I'm like, no, nobody uses my boat. There's only one guy who could use my boat. That's Cliff, because he helped me build it.
Right.
He knows it inside out. So, but not even my dad do I let touch my boat. So I said, okay, yeah, let's go. And so we're supposed to leave at 7 o'clock. At 6:30, I called him up, Dad, it's pouring down rain. And now, why don't we meet at 8 o'clock? So he got over at 8 o'clock. It was down to a light drizzle, pretty much clearing up. We took off, went out. I hit marker two and got a couple of thread fins, and then I threw off to the side of the markers. I was throwing down current to the marker, and I got a couple of thread fins out of there, probably 18 or 20, and then I threw off to the side of the marker because I could see the water was eddying a little bit, and probably got six dozen white bait, the actual hard scale sardines, greenbacks. And got the live well was running, got everything up in there. Not a lot of bait, but enough. Headed up into the mica cutoff, stopped two spots on the mica cutoff. First spot, hardhead catfish. Okay, enough of this spot. All right, go to the second spot, sail cat. Went, okay, enough of the mica cutoff for right now. Headed back up in Tippecanoe Bay, and there's a point I used to fish a lot up in Tippecanoe. Comes out to right as you come in off on the right, you got a real hard point. There's some deep water in front of it, and I had Dad casting on the left side of the boat. I was casting off the right side, so we're fishing both sides of the point. All of a sudden, I hook up redfish. Dad hooks up snook. Mine was about 19 inches. His was probably about 22, 23. Landed those. I threw back in, caught another little snook, and said, "Okay, this isn't really making a spot." So we went over. Went back up further in there and got to a narrow spot between a couple islands. I caught four more snook up there, and now I'm watching the wind, and the wind had been blowing out of the south. It was blowing from the southwest, and all of a sudden the direction of the waves changed. I'm like, uh-oh. All right, we got to think about heading back up, because when the wind switches, that means there's a storm or something's affecting the flow of the air.
Yeah.
So when it went and it changed to it was southeast in the morning. When it switched to southwest, I was like, okay, we headed all the way back up, got to the south end of the mica cutoff, and I wanted to try that hole because Irma flattened that hole out. It was non-existent. It was 2.5 feet of water all the way across the mouth of the cutoff. As I'm coming in the south, going up to fish inside, all of a sudden, I saw 6-7 feet, went up to 5-4. It was probably about 50 feet long. So on the way out, got up, got to the high side of it, up in that 6 foot. As soon as it hit 4 foot, I stopped the boat, anchored up there, and we were casting back into it. And Dad had a shrimp under a bobber. I had a greenback under a bobber. No hits, no fish, no runs, no errors. And then we're looking at the sky going, okay, it's just... And I watched the storm come up, and it got about a quarter mile south of the 41 bridge. And I'm watching it. It's just hitting Punta Gorda, hitting the 41 bridge. And all of a sudden, it went dead calm. It had been rough out there. I mean, 1 foot chop.
Right.
And it went dead calm. I grabbed the reeling that, reeled up the rods, pulled the anchor in, got everything ready. And I hit that boat hard. And about 50 miles an hour, just skimming the surface of the water, because that flat water is going to last right till the storm actually hits.
Right.
Something about the air pressure maybe coming up or going down, but the water gets flat and it gets real kind of weird. It's kind of like, it doesn't feel like normal water. Something about the air pressure on it. And
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but you can actually feel the difference on the boat. Like, just regular August day where there's just not a breath of air, you know, it's different feeling than when it's a storm coming in and it's just all of a sudden just, like, kind of neutralizes the air and that water just feels different on the bottom of the boat.
Yeah, and, I mean, I had the nose up because I started out, it still had that last little bit of chop left from the residual waves. And had the nose down, and as soon as I hit the bottom of the last of that, I picked that nose up, skimming along with just the motor in the water, just going as much as I could, got through the 41 bridge, and by then the storm was literally right on the south edge of the river. And I was able to get up, get to the house, put the boat on the float, shut her down, got the rest of the bait out, because we had unloaded the bait out at the mouth of the cutoff, and got in there, got everything up under the house, and pouring rain. It was like, wow.
So you didn't get wet at all, huh?
No, not a drop, hardly.
That's pretty just impressive.
But thanks to my boat. I mean, it wasn't just me. It was my boat. But it was it's a great trip. But what I think the hidden story, because I didn't talk about it, was that I had fished those spots in the cutoff and done very well with me and Terry, using shrimp and everything else. And we threw shrimp there, we threw white bait, and nothing was in there. I went to a spot I hadn't been to in more than 15 years. And because it hadn't done that good over the course of the last, you know, about 15 years ago, it just got real slow. There was no fish there, and I'd been there several times back then. And I just quit fishing it. And I said, you know what? If the spots I've been fishing now are not producing anything but catfish, I haven't been to this spot forever. I gave up on it because I'd been there four or five times, didn't get even a bite, went there and caught all my fish.
That's pretty surprising. It's neat how that works, though.
But if the spots you go to all the time suck, why not go to spots you don't go to or have never been to or haven't been to in years because they weren't good? Maybe the fish went back to those spots. And that's exactly what happened. I went there, and we had a real nice day. I mean, considering we left the dock about 8:30, quarter to 9, I was back to the house by 1 o'clock, and we had gone all the way in the tippy canoe.
Wow.
So it really wasn't bad. It's not as good as yours, obviously, but, you know, for me, it was still good. But I just thought it was weird that the fish I caught were in spots that I gave up fishing years ago because they were no good.
Yeah, and I totally understand that. And the only reason why it was good for me is, like I said, you know, all this weather and all the bait and everything else. Because, I mean, on a normal night, two or three snook, you know, maybe with artificials and maybe another three to five with a shrimp, if you're lucky. And now we're talking about peanut snook. We're talking, you know, 15 to 24-inch snook. Nothing exciting but fun. Just enjoyable bending the rod.
The ones we were catching were like 24 to 26. A little bit bigger, but not much. Speaking of a little bit bigger, but not much, mackerel up in the harbor again.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to last out the weekend?
It might. I doubt it, but it might. You know, there's so much bait and life out there right now that it'll probably hold those mackerel in, and those mackerel will dive down and get into the higher salinity because the first foot or two is going to be fresh.
So where are you going to go looking for them?
I would start probably somewhere around marker 1 or at the mouth of the Myakka.
Now, marker 1, to find that, look and see where Ponce de Leon Park is and go west about a mile and a half. It's out there off of Ponce de Leon Park about a mile and a half. It's out there. That's the very first marker in the Peace River Channel. Every canal, every channel starts with 1 or 2. So marker 1 is the first of the Peace River segments, and that's right off Ponce de Leon Park.
Yeah, it's a big black marker.
Yeah,
if you're looking at it visually.
Big marker. It's got green number 1 on it.
Yeah, but I would start fishing there and work my way south, heading towards Cape Hayes. But I'd probably be working at a little bit more of an angle towards the east, towards the Alligator Creek Reef, because there's been some Spanish mackerel on that.
Yeah, well, okay. It stands to reason because the Peace River, the mouth of the Peace River points at the west side of the harbor. Obviously, the Myakka River is the top end of the west side. So, on an outgoing tide, that's going to be all fresh water being pulled down out of the rivers. As the water goes down, it pulls more of the water out of the river. The fresh side, the west side of Charlotte Harbor is going to be very fresh. The east side of the harbor is still very salty. So you've got a kind of dividing line down that middle of the harbor where the west side is going to be brown and fresh and the east side of the harbor is going to be clearer and saltier. So those mackerel are going to ride that salt edge.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, the top end of the reef is kind of where that eddy is at, where the east side and the west side kind of collide and bounce off of Mangrove Point.
As the water comes through Boca Grande, Little Gasparilla, Captiva, that's kind of flowing right past Bull Bay across the top end of Pine Island. It hits the east side, and the water coming through Ponarasa Pass and Redfish Pass is trying to push that water north. So the water, very little bit of it turns south to go to Mat Lache. Some does, but it's 20-25% of the volume of water. I would say 70-80% plus of that water hits the east side of the harbor and goes north, because the passes, the water's trying to come in at incoming tide through Ponarasa right from the south. So that's kind of deflecting all that water north along the east side of the harbor. It goes up to hit Punta Gorda. Punta Gorda means wide point. And that's that wide point right at the mouth of the Peace River, comes way out, and as that water comes up the east side, it deflects off heading towards Mayaca, which keeps that area by the Alligator Creek Reef salty. And that Alligator Creek Reef is definitely in the salt side of the area. Now, over on the other side, where the west side of the harbor is, west of Marker 1, that's where you're going to see the, all the fresh water. That's going to be very brown. The east side's going to be very clear.
Yep.
So I think everybody has been out, and the most requested thing right now is black drum. A lot of people talking about black drum. We're hearing them in all the canals. You're hearing them. Ed, have you ever heard black drum, RJ? Listen to them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, underwater, some fish make incredible noise. But black drum sounds like somebody hitting a big bass drum.
I mean, it's amazing to listen to. When I was doing charters, I would go out in the evening, and there's a canal in PGI that I would drift through and have my customers casting for snook up along the docks and the seawall with shrimp, just freelining shrimp up to them. And I loved the drift on that canal because the black drum, if the boat's drifting, the motor's off, they will literally come up under the boat, and you can feel the vibration in the boat, and it just, and you could hear the noise of these black drum making this howling. And what was it, around January, February, we were getting all the calls from people in the aisles that they couldn't figure out what the noise was, and then we would tell them what the noise was, because they're sitting in their house, they got to turn the TV up, it's so loud. Because you get 50 or 200 or 500 black drum in the canal all trying to mate, making their noises, and it gets loud in their houses. Some of the people can't stand it. They can't sleep. You can't watch TV. It's really noise. Wherever you have real hard packed sand up against the seawall, that noise just vibrates, hits that concrete slab of the house, and just echoes in the houses. And we would tell them, man, just have ghost parties.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly,
invite everybody right over for the ghost parties, because all the black drum noises going on. Now, you're not going to hear much of those noises now. A little bit here and there in the evenings, but it's kind of over for as far as the massive volume of it. But one guy literally wanted to sell his house. He wanted to know if he could, what he had to put in the canal to get the black drum out of there. He couldn't stand it anymore. And I said, man, there's nothing you can do. You know, hope they go away. I don't know. Get a fishing pole. Try and catch some
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, long line them, you know.
Yeah. It's definitely a neat sound, because, I mean, the first time I ever heard it scared the daylights out of me, because I was in an aluminum flat-bottom John boat over there off of Midway snook fishing at night.
Yeah, I would tell my customers that, you know, you got to be careful when you go through here, because we have the ghost of fish past. All the fish that I've caught, their ghosts live in this canal, and they come back to haunt me because they're really mad at me for taking so many of their buddies. And all of a sudden, that boat would start, and the bottom of the boat's vibrating, and they're kind of looking at me going, what? And they don't know whether to believe me or not, because I've got quite a face when I'm telling them, you know, all these stories about stuff. And it was hilarious. But I actually had people believing there was fish ghosts after me in the canal.
I'm sure. So. That's not really surprising. Now, to catch these black drum, probably one of the best ways to do it is honestly a blue crab. I mean, cutting a blue crab into half or quarters, depending on the size of the crab, that's by far their number one choice of bait. But
I think if I was going back into like one of the canals to catch black drum, I would go to the bait shop. Hopefully you're going to our bait shop, but go to a bait shop, get a couple dozen, however many shrimp you think you're going to use. Get the shrimp, see if they have any crabs or frozen crabs. If they don't, which is likely the case because this year crabs are at a premium, what I would do then is take one of those portable traps, just anchor the boat up, put some chicken necks in one of those little traps that you lift up, and just check it every once in a while and try and catch some crabs while you're there in the canals.
Yeah.
That would be my number one thing to try and do. We've got those little ones that are kind of square with the two ends open up.
Oh, yeah.
Not the big triangle things, the pyramid traps. Right. They're such a pain. The little square ones where the doors flop open, you're just pulling the doors closed.
Yeah.
Throw some chicken necks in there, and while you're fishing, put those in the water and try and catch some crabs right there where you're fishing.
And you would cut that in half or in quarters, or does it just depend on the size of the crab?
Man, I was telling you how to catch the bait. Now, you're going to have to figure out how to use the bait. I can only do so much here. You know, I kind of walk you up. I can lead you to the crabs, but I can't make you cut them.
No, no. You have the title name Fishing Frank, not Baiting Frank.
No, not Baiting
Frank. I'm writing that one down. That's a good point.
What is it now?
You're not baiting Frank. You're fishing Frank. So we want to know, how do you fish these crabs?
Well, I'm not baiting Frank. So I can fish for the crabs, get them up. Now you have to do the bait part.
Oh, okay.
It's baiting Robert time.
Nice. Nice. I'm not even going to go there with that one.
Robert.
Yeah, used fiddler crabs on black drum.
Yeah.
And the fiddlers are a little easier to catch along the Myakka because they come up all the little drainage ditches, and there'll be hundreds of them in there. And they're not difficult to catch at all. They're just, you know, a little bit on the smaller.
I bet you they are right now because there's so much water there.
Yeah, they're not in there now, but when the water levels are down, there's quite a few fiddlers in there, and that seems to work really well.
The little mangrove crabs, the black crabs you see crawling around people's docks.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite bait for black drum and for snook. Excellent snook bait, because when you hear snook popping at night, quite often there's one of those crabs just out of the water, like maybe with their feet in the water and they're just above the water. Snook will come and suck him right off the side of the piling. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of that popping you hear at night is, them popping those crabs off the side.
Yeah. I've never caught a snook on it.
I've caught them on fiddler crabs, caught them on
I know you have.
The little black crabs.
Well, I've caught one on a fiddler crab messing around behind the house, but, you know, that was a long time ago. So, you know, I know it can be done because I've seen you do it.
Oh, yeah, 20 years ago when I was a young man, I would go out and I could catch snook with these fiddler crabs. But, you know, when you get to be Robert's age, it gets tougher.
Yes, it does. I don't even want to go out and try to catch those fiddler crabs. So when you cut the crab into quarters, let's say you catch a 5-inch blue crab, I would cut it into 4 pieces. You know, and then I'm going to take a fairly good size hook. I'm going to use like a 2-aught or a 3-aught hook.
I would use more of a 4, 5, or 6-aught hook. But if it's a big blue crab like that, that's a lot of crab to get through. Right. I'm going to use a bigger hook. I'm going up to at least a 4-aught.
Okay. And then I'm also
You can do the 2-aught. I'm going to go to the 4-aught.
Hey, it's my story. Stay over there. You told me to deal with the bait.
Okay.
And I'm going to use a J hook, not a circle hook, because I'm not a big fan of circle hooks.
Well, how do you get a circle hook through a blue crab?
I don't know. Same way they get them through for tarpon crabs, I guess. It's a pain.
Well, they're little. A 5-inch blue crab, that's a big thing to get that stupid circle hook through.
I'm cutting it into pieces.
Yeah, okay.
I'm still not going to use
your story. You can live through it.
I'm not using a circle hook, so it's an irrelevant comment.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I'm going to just let it soak on the bottom. I'm not even probably going to use a sinker, depending on the current and the spot. I'm going to let it drift down naturally closer to the seawall or closer to somebody's dock, because they tend to hang out there. Occasionally, they'll swim through the center part of the canal and be suspended up in the water column. But to be honest with you, I have never caught one that way. I don't know if you have or not. I've always...
What's that?
Black drum. Have you caught them out in the center of the canal when they're out there free swimming, just kind of meandering along?
The only one I've ever heard of, and Carl figured out, if you put a live shrimp on or a dead shrimp. Thread the hook on really well so it's really in there. And then mash the shrimp up. Flatten him out a bit. You okay. can use your shoe. I mean, literally, you got to kind of crush him down a little flat.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a free line. But now this shrimp is crushed up, so it's really hard to keep on the hook.
Right.
So using as long a shank hook, big as possible, thread it up through there. And when you see those drum going, you toss that flattened shrimp, crushed up, flattened out, kind of like when a cartoon character hits the ground, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that will drift in front of them. It's got all the smell and everything, but being crushed and flattened slows it way down. A live shrimp's going to move too quick. They're not going to hit it. But if he's flattened out and just kind of drifting there in front of him, you can sometimes get him to eat. But getting one of those black drum that you actually see swirling and moving around all like that, next to impossible. They're really, really tough to get to hook up. Because shrimp dart out of the fish's way. They don't want to chase it. The crab drops to the bottom. You know, they're tough.
Right.
But a crushed shrimp will sometimes do it.
I'd like to try that sometime because that seems just definitely plausible. I mean,
I've never successfully got those black drum you see swimming right underneath the surface going around, and the pink ones and the white ones and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, those have got to be hybrids. They got to be black drum redfish cross. That's the only thing that makes any sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
They could be tainted. Like, I see bass in the golf course ponds that are white and orange and everything else.
Yeah.
Now, it could be something from the fertilizer going into the water that made these fish turn these ridiculous colors of white and orange and whatever. Or it could be that redfish, red drum and black drum. Redfish is a red drum. Black drum is obviously black drum. Genetically, they're close enough to breed.
Yeah.
They can spawn together.
Absolutely.
And I think if one of those every once in a while gets together, the little cross action going on, and you get one of these mutant, weird-colored fish out of that. It's the only thing that makes sense.
I'd like to catch one sometime and just take a DNA sample.
Yeah, we got
to
take
it to
Greg.
One of those guys.
Greg, and see if we can get a DNA.
Yeah, that would be pretty fascinating.
RJ, anything exciting happened for you over the this week?
No, I'd hate to admit it, but I stayed home all weekend.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, I survived the weekend by not doing anything.
That's a wonderful, I mean, that to me sounds like a glorious weekend. I've been running and trying to get everything ready and doing stuff, fishing with my dad, and we got out, and I can tell you, love my boat. Absolutely. I've had that for, what, over 18 years now.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, I got it at the end of 99.
Yeah, I guess that is.
So that's 18 years ago. And I like it just as much as the day I first bought it. You know,
that boat is awesome.
Never going to sell it. Just going to ride that boat till the end of time. I was talking about somebody about getting that guy was telling me, oh, there's an offshore boat. It's like $6,000. It's got twin diesels in it, yada, da, da. And I'm thinking about going, well, yeah, you know, that'd be cool. And I got thinking, okay, that's $6,000. It gets 3 miles to the gallon. All right. I live 27 miles from Boca Grande Pass. So that's 54 miles, right? To go from my house to Boca Grande Pass and back at 3 miles to the gallon, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of gas. And then if I'm going to go 30 or 40 miles out in the Gulf, that's another 60 to 80 miles on top of the 50. So we're talking 100, 150 miles. And I don't have a calculator, so I don't know what that is, but that's a third of it. So let's say if it was 100, that's 33 gallons of gas.
You're using about 50 gallons of gas.
Well,
give or take.
Yeah, let's say 40 gallons of gas times, $4 a gallon in the marina now?
Something like that.
So
probably more than that now.
That's 150, 200 bucks to go out and go fishing every time I go. I'm going to hire Dwayne or one of them guys to take me out. I don't have to pay for the insurance on the boat. I don't have to, you know, pay the maintenance, do the repairs, the fuel costs, pay for the boat, tie it up, keep it from sinking, whatever. I just go pay them some money. So what if it's $1,500 or $1,000 to go out? Let's say it's $1,500. Well, it's $6,000. I can go out four times before I even paid for the boat. And I don't really want to go out in the Gulf that often.
Not that often, no.
So let's say I'm going to go out six times a year at $1,500. that's pretty much your gas maintenance and stuff, keeping the darn boat running. As far as it comes to out in the Gulf, I don't know, if you really love it and you're going out once or twice a week, all good.
But speaking of the Gulf, how has it been out there?
I've been hearing a lot of stuff over man-made structure than natural structure, like the Bayronto, the Pegasus, some of the reefs like the Palm Island Ferry, wherever you got a lot of overhead relief. I haven't been hearing as much at like the boxcars, the lower ones.
Right.
Anything that's a little taller, there's been quite a few fish. Amberjacks have been kind of a big story out there. What have you been hearing?
Yeah, the AJs have been real popular. I mean, guys have, you know, like we talked about before, the topwater popper thing is just kind of starting to really catch on to a lot of people, and they're having a field day, even if they don't want to keep the AJs. Just catch them on top water and then get in their hand. You know,
and these are some 6-inch plus top waters, concave mouth on them, and you give them a real hard jerk, and they go boom, splash through the water, and then the fish come up and blow up right at the surface on them.
Yeah, yeah,
so
it's pretty amazing.
Big baits, big lures, big fish, awesome stuff. What kind of rod and reel would you do on these?
Honestly, I'd probably be using, I'd probably use my tarpon setup. I mean, I'd probably be using a 7.5-foot heavier spinning rod with, you know, like a, probably like a 6,000 or 6,500 size pen with 50-pound braid on it.
Yeah, you know? I want something with at least 250 to 300 yards of 50-pound braid. And I'm not going to go to the 60 or 65 on it because I want to cast. I want to be able to throw this.
Mm-hmm.
And distance can be key.
Yeah.
You know, getting a decent cast so that you can get it out there and pop it back. So I'd prefer a 7.5-foot rod over an 8, but
yeah,
like that 7.5 star, the 15 to 25.
Yeah.
That would be a real nice rod for it. I don't think the 12 to 25 rods would be heavy enough for those amberjacks.
No, I don't think
It'd double them up. You could hang on. It probably wouldn't break it, but all you'd be doing is hanging on. You would get no control, no power, no turnability.
Right.
The rod would be maxed out.
And those lures are like 10 to 18 bucks a piece. I don't want to lose that lure on those fish.
What kind of leader are you going to use on those amberjack?
I'd be using 60-pound mono or fluorocarbon, either one.
All right.
I'm not going to be super picky whether it's mono or fluorocarbon. I think you might probably get more bites on the fluoro, but I'm just not 100% knowledgeable or experienced enough to say that there's a huge enough difference when using a topwater like that those fish are seeing it or not.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'd make a difference or not either. One thing I'm curious about, I've heard about permit out there. Now, would amberjack and permit both be on the same reef or wreck, or is it going to be kind of be one or the other?
I have seen them out there where they're both on the same wreck. But it does definitely seem like there's a higher population of one or the other out there. So they don't, I don't know if they really play very well on the same reef together. I mean, I know they do a little bit, but just not the normal numbers.
All right, but there is quite a few permit out there on a lot of the man-made structures.
Absolutely.
Out there.
And like you said, I've heard of them out there on the Mohawk is all but gone. It got destroyed after Irma. It was already pretty well destroyed, so it's actually a debris field. But there's a lot of relief out there. There's just scattered pieces everywhere throughout that whole surrounding area. So you'll find that this section over kind of towards the southeast is holding the permit, and then you go over towards the northwest, and that one's holding the amberjacks and the barracudas on it. You know, they are scattering around.
Wonder
and
why the Pegasus wrecked up in Irma. Is it in that shallow?
Well,
or the Mohawk, rather?
No, it's out there 30 miles.
It's I would have thought down deep, it wouldn't have gotten affected by the currents.
It will. You have enough turbid ocean going out there, it'll affect 120 feet of water.
Yeah, because, I mean, that would take 30, 40-foot waves to affect something down 60 feet.
Yeah, it had already, the whole top had collapsed because it got a little excessive with the explosives when they set it off. So before Irma, the deck had already, the top tower basically had already collapsed.
So they weakened the structure by sinking it.
Yeah, yeah. They put a little too many explosives in it, and you kind
of. I wonder what part of you need one hole in a little bit of time they didn't get.
it makes for a neater video when they sync the whole thing in one shot.
Yeah. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And blow metal all over the place. Yeah.
Okay. Well, plus you got to burn a couple holes in it to get it to try to sync in that spot rather than sliding off at an angle.
I wonder why they wouldn't, like, just put the anchor down front and back and then just bust a hole in it. It's going to go down.
Yeah. No, that's true. I don't know. I'm not an explosive technician. I'm a crustacean relocation engineer. I stay out of that stuff. We'll ask Andrew. He would know.
Yeah. We'll ask Andrew. Blow stuff up. Andrew, when you're going to blow up a ship, what do you do? Okay. That kid who used to work for us, I mean, if there was anything that that kid could destroy with some type of explosive, I mean, Jiminy Crickets, don't give him a rifle or a pellet gun and something that can go bang. All right. What are the tarpon doing right now?
We're starting to come up on the full moon. They're still in the pass. But with all this rain and the full moon, I think you're going to really start to see some of those fish break up and move out to the beaches a little bit more and up inside the harbor. But if you're going out this weekend for them, definitely concentrate the pass for the most part. Don't hesitate to look through the harbor or out on the beaches, though, because like I said, there are some fish out there, just not great.
And if I hesitate?
Then just go right to the pass.
Oh, okay.
It'll make it easier.
He told me not to hesitate. I was just wondering.
Work for me. I got perfectly good idea of what he was trying to tell me.
I just wanted to know what would happen to me if I actually hesitated at this moment. But,
yeah.
Okay. But now, are there tarpon along the beaches yet?
They're peppered out there, but not great numbers. I'm starting to hear better numbers lately from Stump Pass heading north again, because they seem to have fizzled out a little bit there last week, but this week starting to get a few more reports of them.
All right, because we got to put the tarpon map up tomorrow, and we put up a map that has where your best places are, where it's 50-50 and where there's just a chance, and then with the night spots and all that. How's the deep holes in the harbor? Anything?
Some Spanish mackerel, a few sharks. I mean, there's quite a few smaller sharks. I haven't heard much. Just you'll hear of one here, one there, but nobody's hitting any.
Yeah, a couple came in and said, well, we've been shark fishing all this time for all this. We've never caught any. Yeah. You say the sharks are hitting. And where are you going? Well, Boca Raton Pass. Why are you going fishing Boca Raton Pass for sharks?
Right.
That's.
Have we put anywhere on the website that it has been really good out there for sharks? Inside of Boca Raton Pass has been okay, but not in the past.
Yeah, I mean,
even
right
the large
inside,
sharks haven't been
just,
there hardly at all.
Just up on the inside, on the north end of Cayo Costa, just get out of the intercoastal, go about 200 yards down Cayo Costa on the intercoastal side, and go about halfway between the intercoastal and the beach. Drop your anchor there, put your chum bag out, you'll catch sharks. You know, in front of Bowler Turtle Bay, you can catch sharks there. In front of Jug Creek Shoals, over on the east side, anywhere at that lower end of Charlotte Harbor, there's always some sharks down there this time of year.
Right.
And it doesn't matter incoming or outgoing tide, boys and girls. It's literally, put the chum bag out, go out and fish it.
Yeah.
And quit using 5-pound baits. You want a half a sardine, a AFW bleeding leader thing, probably a 6-aught. I put half a sardine on it, throw it out about 4 feet under a bobber, or just toss it out free line, half a sardine. You're looking for sharks that are 2 to 4 foot long with regular spinning tackle. There's plenty of them out there. You don't, you know, that's where you start. Get good at that and then step up into the bigger ones. You know, work your way up. Don't go for jaws the first time out. You don't need a 14-foot tiger shark on your first, you know, trip out there shark fishing.
Especially if you haven't learned how to handle them once you get them up to the boat.
Yeah, a lot easier to start with two-foot sharks.
Yeah, a 2 or 3-foot shark is difficult enough. You get a 6 or an 8-foot bull shark up against the boat, you better know what you're doing.
You know, I just don't understand why people want to start with, like, the craziest thing there is. But, hey, who am I to say? You know, I've got my fingers and toes. I can still play bass.
Right.
You know, so.
And then make sure you can identify any of those little sharks. Make sure you're catching the right ones if you do decide to keep them.
Let them go if you don't know exactly what it is. Because a lot of trouble, a lot of fines. And I guess that's going to kind of bring us to the end of this rainy tropical weekend here. Lots of stuff, a lot of weather moving in. Be safe out there, boys and girls. Don't let a storm get between you and where you came from. Say good afternoon there, Robert.
I want to say happy Memorial Day and thanks to all of our vets.
Oh, happy Memorial Day. Thank you to the vets. RJ, are you a vet?
No.
No, neither am I. So, okay. I was too young
but
for
thank
one
you all for your service. I work for Colt Firearms, and I got the draft exemption because I was working for a defense contractor.
Oh, so you were actually making the stuff they were fighting with.
That's
so.
Right.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was just too young for one and too old for the next one. So, anyway, RJ, say goodbye, RJ.
Goodbye, RJ.
All right, see you, boys and girls. Just to ease my mind.